Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. On this week's episode, NAHU's Marcy Buckner, John Green, and Chris Hartman will discuss NAHU's recent response to the Trump administration's announcement on the expanded role of navigators in discussing association health plans and short-term plans. We will also review the latest call to action on the health insurance tax, the prospects for value-based care, and we'll look ahead to what's on tap with the short-term plan final rule and an interim final rule on risk adjustment on the last stages before being released. Before we begin, as a reminder, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these channels ahead of being distributed through the Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. The big whoop this week for the Washington Update podcast is NAHU sending a response to the Trump administration's funding opportunity announcement for navigators, which indicated the administration would be more likely to provide funding to navigators that could reach left-behind populations, informing them about the availability of association health plans and short-term plans. We touched on this issue last week, but what were some of the concerns NAHU addressed in our comments?
Since more has come out from the administration on this since we heard about it last week, earlier it was in the press that these were comments that were made by the administration, by folks over at CMS and others. And then when we really drilled down into it, it was really that this language was included in a funding opportunity announcement, also called an FOA, for navigators. And it was the language in that grant opportunity, basically, is what it is, an application for a grant to be a navigator, that really caused us some problems. And in the grant application, it provides that entities applying for navigator grants will be expected to be able to provide targeted assistance to serve underserved or vulnerable populations as identified by the exchange within the exchange service area. And they refer to these populations as left behind populations, and that those that are applying for these grants need to be able to provide these populations with information on how to enroll in coverage options, in addition to qualified health plans, which are the QHPs offered on the exchange. So in addition to those, such as association health plans, AHPs, and short-term limited duration insurance, short-term plans, STPs, which are non-qualified health plans, so non-QHPs. And this is where we come to a problem, because under the federal law, navigators are only able to assist in enrollment for qualified health plans, so QHP compliant plans. And under what we've seen so far with the final rule on AHPs and what we're expecting for the short-term plan final rule, those plans are expected to be non-conforming with the qualified health plan requirements. So this implies then that navigators would be able to assist and educate consumers on non-QHP compliant plans, which violates what we currently have under the federal law. So we reached out to some of the other agent groups and put a letter together to send to Secretary Azar and Administrative Verma, pointing out this inconsistency in the federal law and voicing our concerns. But the group that we did this with, we call it our Agent Alliance. And John, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Agent Alliance and how we've worked together over the past couple of years?
The Agent Alliance was formed in the heat of the MLR debate at the beginning of the debate to bring all the agent groups, professional groups together in support of addressing the MLR. And since that, we've always worked together on that and other issues that have come around, such as the financial services regulation that NAFA led. They asked us to participate in a letter writing campaign with the Agent Alliance. And we thought that we would contact the Agent Alliance on this issue, because they're getting questions too.
Right. And so traditionally it includes NAHU, the Big I, PIA, NAFA and CIAB are usually the groups that participate in the Agent Alliance. And here we really wanted to point out, like I mentioned, the inconsistency in federal law between what was suggested that navigators be able to do in the funding opportunity grant and what they're actually able to do as it's listed in federal law. We also wanted to make sure that CMS was aware that by allowing navigators to enter into this area of assisting consumers with non-QHP compliant plans and the possibility of assisting in enrollment with those, that they could be overstepping many state laws that require strict licensure for anyone who's going to sell, solicit, or negotiate insurance as an agent producer.
NAHU has been a leading advocate on behalf of agents and brokers with regards to the role of navigators, essentially since the program's inception. Marcy, can you give us some background in the work that NAHU has done to protect the role of brokers, ensure adequate consumer protections for those working with navigators, and how NAHU has partnered with navigators?
Sure. So this has been a project that I have worked very closely with since starting with NAHU in 2012. And as we worked up to the first open enrollment on October 1st of 2013. And when the law came out on how navigators were supposed to function and looking at the list of duties that they had with consumers, outreach was a big part of their advocacy efforts to be able to reach out to different populations, educate them about the law, be able to tell them how to see if they were able to qualify for a subsidy, and doing some of these things. And so as we saw the level of interaction that navigators were being given through the different proposed rules that were being finalized and the level of consumer interaction that they were being granted, we really became concerned about the consumer protections that were going to be in place around some of the navigators and whether states would be involved in being able to regulate navigators within their borders. And remember, traditionally, under the Gramm-Leach-Liley Act, states have the ability to oversee the sale of insurance within their borders. So we took action to work with many of our states, and I think we were successful in almost over half of the states in getting some type of regulation in place to oversee navigators. And so when you're looking at regulatory authority, there's a few different kinds. There's licensure, registration, and certification. Licensure is the most strict, which is what agents and brokers are subject to, as well as continuing education and Arizona emissions insurance. Registration is the next strict, followed by certification. And so states went for a combination of the different pieces when they were looking at how they were going to regulate navigators.
Marcy, when we did all of this work with state legislatures and state insurance commissioners, what were some of the themes that the states had while they put together programs for navigators?
Some of the things that they were looking at in the consumer protection areas were making sure that navigators had background checks. They were going to be and are privy to a lot of personal identifiable information as well as personal health information, social security numbers, addresses, names and social security numbers of dependents, all of these things. And so we wanted to make sure that when we were asking for these consumer protections, that a background check could be in place for these people who are accessing all of the sensitive information. Some states went as far as to request fingerprinting. I know many states do that for agents and brokers, and that was a possibility that a number of states looked at with navigators. And then also just having a simple registration process where they knew everyone who was acting on behalf of a navigator or navigator entity in their state, so that anything went wrong, that the state would be able to find out who was interfacing with that consumer and really see who was to be held responsible for any harm that came to that consumer.
Kind of like an appointment process.
Kind of like an appointment process. And so with this, as we've protected our scope of practice and what agents and brokers do, both with QHPs and non-QHPs, both in and out of the exchange and in the small and large and individual group market, as we see how we've protected agents and brokers in that way with the introduction of navigators really in 2013. And now we see the action that we're taking again to protect the role of the agent and broker when it comes to involvement in AHPs and short-term plans. It really harkens us back to some of the ways that we've had to protect agents and brokers in the past.
So relative to this idea that CMS put out and the role of the agent. Doesn't this sound familiar? What happened when MA rolled out
Medicare Advantage?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we actually faced this or similar problem during the rollout, where with the rapid rollout of the plans, they just set aside the appointment process, didn't know who their sales force was, and bad things happen. And I'm worried that, especially given how highly specialized association health plans and short-term limited duration plans are in terms of how you sell it and present it, that mistakes can easily be made. And if navigators don't have the proper training and licensure, that agents will get blamed for mistakes that they make.
And that's a major part of the comments that we submitted earlier this week. The left behind population that the administration is so worried about and concerned about the navigators being able to reach are people that they are identifying as individuals who are disproportionately without access or care or unaware of the full range of options for enrollment. And there's no one better than an agent or broker to tell you about all of the options of enrollment. That's something that we've talked about even prior to this issue coming up, that only an agent can tell you what's available on and off of an exchange, because sometimes the best option for you may not be on the exchange. And a navigator can only talk to those QHP compliant plans that are on the exchange. But we also in our letter included the fact that, like John alluded to, the folks that are going to be going into a short-term plan or into an AHP especially are not going to have an easy enrollment. They're going to have varied backgrounds of their involvement with health insurance in the past. And especially with association health plans, the complexity of how these are going to be put together and the nuance of what type of plan this individual would now have is very complex. And so we want to make sure that the appropriate people, agents and brokers that are licensed by the states, have Arizona Admissions Insurance, have continuing education, that those are the folks that are reaching out and assisting not only this left behind population that the administration talks about, but really all populations when we're looking at making sure consumers are enrolled in the best plan for them. We do want to make sure, however, that we clarify that we aren't against the Navigator program. We do support the navigators in their efforts for outreach and their assistance in enrollment with several different populations across the board. We worked very closely with Enroll America that is no longer in existence, but it was vital to the rollout of the Navigator programs at the very beginning of the ACA open enrollment periods. We are on their advisory board. So agents and brokers can work very well alongside navigators, but we really want to make sure that the appropriate person is working with the consumers. And here, when it comes to AHPs and short-term limited duration plans, the correct professional to work with a consumer is a licensed agent and broker.
Yeah, I think in several states, they work together very nicely, where you would have somebody come in and the navigator may sign them up for Medicaid. But when they found that they were making too much money for Medicaid or had other complications, they would often refer them to somebody with more expertise like an agent. So I think the two can coexist nicely and did in certain states if people are willing to stay in their own lanes and realize that they have different needs and expertises.
NAHU activated its Operation Shout this week to encourage Congress to support bipartisan legislation to delay the health insurance tax for calendar year 2020. If the end goal is to pass a full repeal, why should Congress pass yet another delay of this tax?
So right now, the health insurance tax is in place for the year 2018. It's adding, on average, around $500 to a policy or several percentage points of cost onto a policies. And this has made policies more expensive for the year 2018. In the year 2019, we again have a delay of the HIT tax in place. So that will reduce the costs of policies for plan year 2019. What we do not want to see have happen is that tax to come back in the year 2020. We're doing so much to try to stabilize the insurance market, and there are so many things that are currently going on that unstabilize the insurance, from risk adjustment payments to cost sharing reductions to the zeroing of the individual mandate. This is one thing that we can control for the year 2020 to reduce the cost of health insurance. And so while we're very supportive and want to see complete repeal of the HIT tax, I think it's important to get in now the delay for the year 2020 because insurance carriers make plans out several years in advance. And this is not something that we can have happen in the year 2020 itself. It's better to get it in now and hopefully put into a large package of other legislation moving through Congress.
But having said that, we're always fighting for full repeal.
And just to allude to what we have experienced in the past, as Chris was saying, this isn't something that we're going to be able to do in 2020 if we're still working for continued delays and haven't had a full repeal by that time. Remember the whole reason why we did not have a repeal during 2018, during the current year, is because we weren't able to get that delay done in 2017. And it got pushed and pushed and pushed at the end of the year to the beginning of 2018, where it was no longer able to be implemented. So it's very critical to go ahead and get this done, like he was saying, even while we're working on a full repeal, to make sure that we can protect the year 2020 while we're continuing to work on a full repeal of this and many other taxes.
There is talk about doing a full repeal of the device tax in the fall. So we are talking to leadership and rank and file members on the relevant committees about, hey, if you're serious about repealing a device tax, or if this is just a messaging bill, then why don't you message on HIT tax and Cadillac tax while you're at it?
Congress, unfortunately, has this tendency to work on deadlines. And as we've seen with several government shutdowns in the last year, they tend to even go past the deadlines. This is not something you can do with the HIT tax, and that's why we have, in this year that we're in now, the HIT tax back in place, because Congress felt they could go up to the very end and work on this later. And once the tax is in place, it's very hard to undo for that particular calendar year, which is why it is in place for this year, because they went up to that deadline, thought they could go over a little bit and then let it go or repeal for the rest of the year. And it just, the way health insurance works, that turned out to be very complicated. So we can't allow Congress's tendency to do their homework at the 11th hour, let the HIT tax come back again.
If we get a delay, we'll be very pleased. And if we do get it, hopefully it comes during the second bite of the apple on tax reform in the fall. Hopefully we don't wait till the end of the year during lame duck, but they just might.
The Senate continued their series of hearings on healthcare costs this week, and HHS Secretary Alex Azar named Adam Bowler to lead the agency's value-based care agenda. NIHU has long advocated for value-based insurance design. What are the prospects for this, both given this week's congressional hearing and the administration's announcement?
We're really excited to see the nomination and the confirmation of Adam Bowler as the director of CMMI, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and to be serving in the role that he is with value-based design. He was actually confirmed earlier this year in April, but wasn't able to take his place in the administration until now, because he was the founder and CEO of Landmark Health, a company that provides home-based medical care. And so he was in negotiations to sell Landmark Health, basically, and leave his position there as CEO before being able to join CMS in his role overseeing the value-based design initiative. So as we have mentioned in the past, where it's very difficult to get anything done when the appointments aren't in place and the agencies have empty offices, this is a huge step forward for CMS, and we're really looking forward to working with him in this position and hopefully taking this all in a new direction. We have submitted comments on ways that we believe that CMS can take an approach with value-based design, and we've also submitted comments about a new task force that they want to put together on this issue, and we've suggested that, obviously, an agent or broker be a part of that task force, as you all are able to represent consumers in so many different markets. So this, like I said, is just a huge step forward, and we're looking forward to working with Bowler.
Value-based design, you'll remember, is paying for what works, for outcome-based, as opposed to the fee for service model that exists traditionally in health insurance. We've started seeing a lot of value-based design start to become in the Medicare Advantage programs. And this is, I think, very helpful for things like chronic disease management and other things that will help people prevent long-term, more expensive healthcare solutions. And I think it's also important to allow money to go to truly paying for what works. So right now, what medicines cost, what operations cost, what medical device costs are often disconnected from their actual success or presenting any sort of better life experience for the patient. So re-examining that model, I think, is actually one of the best ways we're going to be able to start to bend the cost curve in healthcare. And I also think value-based design offers us an opportunity to move past and turn the page from the old ACA Obamacare debates and move on to really something that I think can improve the quality of healthcare, but also reduce cost of healthcare.
And Dan, like you mentioned, there were some hearings in the House and Senate this week. On the House side, in Ways and Means, they discussed value-based care. They looked at what current issues are in place now that prevent value-based care from being successful. So I think that the interest that we're having in Congress and value-based care, combined with actually having someone who is in a position to focus just on that at CMS, who is leading the effort on value-based design initiatives, is foreshadowing to what we'll see in the future coming both from the administration and Congress with value-based design opportunities.
It's now time for the senior moment, our review of the key happenings in Medicare and long-term care. John, as NAHU's lead of these issue areas, what is your senior moment for the week?
I would like to thank Armando Luna of Aetna for inviting me to speak before about 300 FMOs in Atlanta yesterday. I spent 2 days there, spent a lot of time talking to FMOs from all over the country, and gained some valuable insights into some of the challenges that they face. And in fact, I ended up pitching my presentation and running with what they were doing at Aetna. They're doing some cutting edge work as they fold Coventry into their business and create what they're calling One Aetna. And with an administration that's increasingly friendly towards Medicare Advantage, I think they're moving in lockstep with the opportunities that they have. And we hope to forge closer relationships with Aetna going forward.
Looking ahead to what's on tap for next week, the Trump administration is in the final stages of releasing their final rule on short-term plans and an interim final rule on the ACA's risk adjustment program, payments for which were recently suspended pending ongoing court challenges. What should agents and brokers be on the lookout for with both of these regulations?
So last week we talked in depth about the risk adjustment issue and the different court findings, one from the New Mexico court and the other in Massachusetts, that are contradictory to each other. And the fact that with the ruling in New Mexico, it halted the payments from the administration as a result of their decision in the district court there. And so this has taken on the ability for the administration to step in. A lot of folks have opined that CMS has the ability to release rules to be able to make it so these payments can continue to be made to some of these carriers who will lose billions of dollars without the risk adjustment payments going through. So an interim final rule has been submitted to the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, which is the last stop before a rule is released. So it was just submitted there earlier this week. We're expecting to see it either Friday afternoon today or possibly later next week. But it is a response to the court ruling invalidating part of the risk adjustment program and saying that it doesn't have to be budget neutral and that these payments will be able to come out and help carriers with some of those payments that they're using to cover the disproportionately sick or expensive customer base that they have.
Also, I expect next week that in the House of Representatives, there will be a number of different healthcare-related pieces of legislation out there. The list isn't finalized yet, but we're hearing various changes to HSAs and possible things like repeal of the medical device tax. I would give one piece of caution to what we see happening in the House next week. A lot of what they're talking about putting on the floor of the House of Representatives are not necessarily things that the Senate has been incentivized or interested in passing and seeing going to the president's desk. Some of these bills might be a little more message-oriented and oriented towards a lot of House Republicans who are looking to get reelected this fall. So while we're excited to see some of these topics like HSA reform finally brought up, just a little bit of caution on the ability to actually see the law itself get changed.
We're also expecting the final rule for short-term plans to come out again any day now. It is another one that has gone over to OMB, the final stop before being released. And this, again, we're expecting not much change from the proposed rule, which allowed short-term plans to be lengthened from the three-month restriction that was put in place under the Obama administration to a full 364 days, so just under 12 months. And like I said, we're expecting that in the next couple of days. And when that comes out, we'll be sure to provide a full review of the final rule on STPs.
Finally, it's time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour's Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to, Marcy?
This week, we're toasting to a group of senators who came together asking for bipartisan support to sign a resolution to intervene in the court case that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago that may put in jeopardy the ability for pre-existing conditions to continue to be covered by the law. So we are looking forward to continued support on providing coverage for pre-existing conditions, and we toast those senators for taking the lead in guaranteeing that coverage.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NAHU, visit nahu.org.